You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. And David, I was reading a tweet that our associate Greg Davies sent me, and it talked about you sending out a note that Macquarie is starting to cover Discovery and that there may be a 15 billion rand hole in the life account. And that, I suppose, explain nearly 9% down on Friday, and at one stage 10-11% down this morning. Currently, as we pre-record, down around about 7-7.5%. This is yet another example of a former high flyer doing terribly. And I just can't quite believe what I'm seeing when I look at my sharenet.co.za screen. Tell me about Discovery first.
Well, you know, the problem is that when the NHI came, the National Health Insurance came out with their proposed bill, I think on Thursday, the market fell and everybody attributed the weakness that we saw in Discovery to this. But this is years away. This is discussions away. We haven't got the money. And I don't think anybody takes it seriously yet, even though there's some very tough talk coming out of politicians. So when you look at it, you say, well, that's not the reason. There must be something else that is driving the share price down. And I couldn't get to anything. And circulating here at the moment, you know, one of our traders or a chap who's got contact in the market said, apparently Macquarie, and we deal with Macquarie. When I say we deal with them, we have a research arrangement with them, and we're having a presentation on Wednesday by a new analyst. I'm not sure of her name. She's probably, you know, she's new at Macquarie, and she's just apparently the story is that she's just initiated coverage and has been talking about a big hole, so in the Alive account, meaning that, you know, that they're stretching the valuation. So these are serious. When I say accusations, allegations, and I like to know, well, if she's done it, has she gone to the company with it? Has she addressed it with the company? Has she checked her report? But she would have done this presentation already to certain institutions.
Yes.
You know, once she comes to us, we're at the bottom end of the list. You know, we're the last to see these kind of reports, and I understand that. You know, as long as we get some kind of coverage, but. So I picked that up, and I like to search, well, has anybody seen it? You know, what is she saying? Is this reason why the shares have come down under this pressure? You know, is there relevance to this? Is there some kind of element of truth or people just being naughty and saying, acting on instincts and selling this thing down? So I'm trying to get to the bottom. I'm trying to see the report to see what she says and whether there's a specter of, you know, any just some kind of truth to this.
Okay, let's stay with Macquarie for a moment before we get to NHI, because I need you to explain to the layman as well what NHI would mean, even if in years to come it does arrive, and why the market is slightly spooked by it. But have the 15 billion hole in the life account, does that mean that they're paying out more than they're receiving? Does it mean there's lots of redemptions? What does it mean?
In the future, that's right. In other words, meaning, and this is my interpretation, if they continue like this, they've been selling life insurance very cheaply. That means that their liabilities are 15 billion more than the funds that they will receive or the on the life account. In other words, do you understand? I'm trying to explain in very simple terms. I'm not an actuary. I don't know life insurance that much, but I would mean means that there will be a liability. We often see this in pension funds. You know, you see what you call a hole where you've underprovided for pensions, you know, and it's like a Ponzi scheme. You can keep going because you're getting money in, but eventually down the line, your liabilities will swamp the money coming in and the assets that you have against those kind of liabilities. So you've got to cover those liabilities very well. And that's what she's alluding to, that they've misread it. We saw a little bit of a hint of it in their last set of results where they said they had miscalculated the life account, and that caused some kind of losses. So she's probably working on this and extended it a lot.
Okay. NHI now. Mm. What are the implications of the National Health Insurance scheme that's been mooted for so many years now? Does it mean that doctors therefore have to work for the scheme? Government makes them work for them, if you see what I mean? Or does it simply mean that there is competition to the private healthcare sector and the private insurance sector?
No, it's more than that. I think it's more than that. I think under this scheme, and I I'm paraphrasing or trying to give you my interpretation. Mm. It really means that, you know, there's like primary health and you can only go to another scheme for issues that are not covered by this primary health or this basic health scheme, which is run by the government. So
we don't have the doctors and the skills for that, though. No, we don't have the facilities. So it's all pie in the sky, this is.
Totally. It's fantasy. It's just total, total fantasy. But in other words, what they want to do is to raise cash, which they can only do by taxing you more. So they're going to tax you over and above what you pay to your medical aids, although your medical aids will probably come down because you're not going to be covered on what you're covered at the moment. So they're going to get more taxes. With those taxes, they're going to improve the hospitals, they're going to get more doctors, and they're going to give every single person in South Africa access to hospital facilities or to doctors.
Which is a good thing in principle, but it's going to stretch the infrastructure to its limit.
Well, you've got how many taxpayers? Maybe 17 million taxpayers. Not even. I don't even think it gets close to that. Having to subsidize or fund 58 million residents.
Yes.
So you can't do that. Or you've got businesses. You just can't do that. We're not an economy that can cover that. In other countries where there's 4 or 5%, yes, you can have national health insurance, as in the UK where you've got 5% unemployment and so on. And it's a rich country, but you can't do it in a country like this. It's just absolute fantasy. And if anything, you're going to, you know, if doctors are going to be employed by the state and the state hasn't got that much money, of course they're going to seek jobs elsewhere and so on. So the whole standard of medicine will fall with it. But you can't talk to politicians, you know. Everything is done around a table in the comfort of some very comfortable offices with plush carpets and tea and canteens and, you know, everything else that comes comes in corporate life.
It's almost like a gentleman. When I say gentleman's club, I mean the sort of theory or atmosphere of a gentleman's club. It's almost like a closed shop when it comes to decision making. You've got the top six and they sit around and they decide for the 50, 60 million people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's exactly. But it's impossible. The equation just doesn't work. You know, it's impossible to actually implement anything like that at the moment. And I'm not taking away medicine from the poor, not at all. We all want something, but you need an economy. First of all, you've got a 400 billion hole in Eskom, you know, which you have to fill before you even start to think about national health. So there's so many things on the agenda that we're not addressing. And that's why you can't take it seriously at this stage. You know, you can take their intent seriously, but you can't believe that the funds are going to be available for this to happen. And therefore, that's why I'm saying at this point, it's you're dreaming if you think it's going to hurt people like Discovery and that. So therefore, there are other issues that you must look at.
There must be something else as well. It's 10 past 4, and I've got a 15-minute delayed screen. But I'm looking at the worst performers on the JSE today, according to ShareNet. Aspen, down 8 2/3%. Discovery, down 7.5%. Dischem, down 5.5%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was another one as well in that field. It's just been knocked off, but it was also down around about 4%. But three of the top five, Aspen, Discovery, Dischem, it's not difficult to assess the theme. Exactly. It's all to do with medicines and healthcare.
You've got Netcare at a 52-week low as well. That's the one. Down over 4% as well. Yeah. So there is a theme. I'm sure that short sellers are taking advantage and having a field day by pushing these down. So there is some element of association with that. So yeah, and with that also you've got African Rainbow Capital, which are closely linked to Sanlam, to the financial services sector.
Yeah.
And along the way, if you impose something like the NHI, it's going to hurt consumer spending, because this, once you get taxed more, you haven't got enough, you haven't got money to spend on consumption. Your disposable income comes down. So, it just weakens the entire economy. So it's a worrying thought. It's it's a very, very worrying thought, you know, where this is going. And the problem is sometimes government needs to step up. You need them. We haven't got that. You know, we haven't got a government that's actually addressing the issues and addressing them urgently. We're talking about them and we hint at them, but there's been no action. And it's hammering this market. So when I say it's depressing, it's very difficult to be here at the moment because a lot of your clients are invested in the market and have their pension funds and provident funds and, in fact, have saved their entire wealth. And you suddenly see it being, you know, taken apart by, you know, by the market performance.
This is not going to be good for the asset management industry because these are some stocks that are widely, widely held. I mean, we don't have a big universe of big stocks on the JSE Securities Exchange. And these are widely held stocks. And the latest update on my screen, 9.2% down now for Aspen, 7.25% down for Discovery, Netcare coming in at 4.25% weaker, and it goes on. Do you think, though, David, that in the past, we actually shouldn't be shocked by this because in the past they were simply too high, they were too profitable, they were too protected, and they were too pampered, and therefore we all fell for it. And this is just coming back to equilibrium or maybe slightly below the equilibrium line. Is there a chance that that might also be a factor?
Definitely. Absolutely right. We've been saying this for some time about the retail sector. You know, we have an economy that's hardly growing or is growing below the mean, below the global mean. And you have multiples PEs at double digits. We're growing at single digit, and you have PEs at high high double digits. Then there's got to be a something's got to give, and I think finally the market's given. There was a lot of cash that has been building up, pension fund contributions and natural savings that come into the hands of the financial services industry. But even them. You know, even them have to start, those financial institutions have to start pulling back and saying, hold on a sec, interest rates are high, 9%, whatever it is. I'm much safer putting my money into bonds and just seeing where this all leads. And that's what's happened. I think there is a kind of capitulation that we've seen. I can't keep up with it. You know, when I say I can't keep up with it, the number of companies that have lost 20, 25%, 30% is just staggering. And Lindsay, you know, what I'm trying to illustrate is that, and I've been here a long time, you know, it's always an up and down journey. And in the bad times where we've had markets collapsing, 87, back in 69 and various places, you know, these are the kind of falls that we saw. In fact, in these cases, they're even more than that. Where we've been masked is that because the rand has given way, it's actually like a circuit breaker. We've seen the mining stocks and we've seen our international stocks kind of covering up for that, and they're very large businesses. So you get a view that the index itself is holding up, but below that has been calamitous. I'm just looking at some of these year-to-date falls. You know, Rabose. I don't know these. Into 70% down. Okay, it's not one of ours. Omnia. 60%, you know, and so we go. These are big, big falls. Massmart down 60%. EOH down 50%. You know, SAPI down 42%. Aspen 42%. This is just the year. This is just this year. Yeah. If I go back the full year, it's even more than that. So you've virtually destroyed the value. Now, you might say that a person who was worth $1 billion is now worth, you know, $300 million. Oh, he can still live on that. That's true. You know, you can still live well. But I mean, it's completely destroyed confidence and family wealth or investment wealth. I'm just shattered. You know, I'm shattered by what I've seen.
You sent me when I asked you, can we speak at our usual time? I sent David Shapiro my normal WhatsApp. Okay, see you at 4:00, and I had to come on a little bit earlier because I wanted to extend it. And he said, I am fed up with being battered with a triple exclamation mark afterwards, and I've never seen you use an exclamation mark before.
No, but you know why? Because I've been urging people to invest abroad. You know, for simple reason, not politics. In an economy that's hardly growing, you're going to get this kind of fallout. an economy that's not really a modern economy. We've still been lifted by old-fashioned businesses and, you know, and then commodity markets are meaning. And those commodity markets can be very difficult. And because they're volatile, you can find the iron ore price at 120 one day, and the next day it's where it is today at 84 or 85, you know, around about there. Mm-hmm. So it does have some, it can be very volatile. And I've been urging people to take their money offshore to protect it by investing in kind of more modern type economic stocks or economy stocks. So I've been doing that, but we still have a residue of investors who are forced to stay in South Africa through Regulation 28, which is the those rules that govern pension and provident funds and tunics and RAs as well. So, and in those cases, it's also been very, very hard for them because we still have exposure to the markets here, and we've tried its best to cover them. But our performance, and I'm talking generally, not specifically my performance, the performance of the JSE has been sideways for so long. And then suddenly people are now waking up and saying, you know, I've done nothing on the JSE. I've been in there for 5 years. I've done nothing. And the answer is, well, you're not surprised. This economy hasn't grown. But Lindsay, why I'm frustrated or why you get better is that these are the savings that people have put aside for their retirement. And that's where the problem lies. It's not giving them the kind of returns that everybody projected, you know, who've looked backwards to try and project in the past. And that's where we've kind of let down. This industry has kind of let down its customers and its clients.
Not a pretty domestic picture at all. It's like that film with George Clooney, you know, the film where he was living in a fishing village somewhere in North America, Canada or something, and he went out in order to go and get the ultimate catch because he hadn't had a particularly good season,
right,
whatever the storyline was. And he got everything. Everything conspired against him. And it seems as though everything might conspire against JSE investors. Because
that was called The Perfect Storm.
The Perfect Storm, exactly right. Yeah, it was quite a good film.
I actually met the author, who was a wonderful chap. He was an ex-veteran, yeah. The Perfect Storm, yeah. Awesome. And that's exactly what we've been hit by.
Precisely. Mr. Trump, in his wisdom, he's losing his marbles more and more every day. And in fact, there was somebody, I mean, Liston Mainchi said to me, our friend Liston said to me last week, he says, you've got to call into question his sanity. And the same thing was on CNN. I know CNN is a Trump-bashing media outlet, but on the other hand, they said he's starting to now really display the signs of insanity. He suddenly said, when everything's going badly in Southeast Asia and beyond to China, Trump says he's not ready to do a deal with China.
No, no.
Why do you need to say that? What's it? I am ready to do a deal, and we are going to talk about it. He says, no, I'm not ready to do it. Why does he say that? Why does he say that the Clintons were involved in Epstein's suicide?
No.
He's completely lost. He's totally irresponsible.
Do you know there's a very interesting article that I tweeted it, that my daughter sent me from a magazine called The Atlantic. Okay. Now, The Atlantic is a political magazine. I mean, not taking any side, but very highly respected magazine in the United States. You could probably get it on the internet if you subscribe. But in an article, they explained his populist type rhetoric. And they give you background to what rhetoric is. And there's one quote that I liked. He says, when people listen to him, when his followers listen to him, they want red meat. In other words, he throws him red meat like a hungry lion, you know, because they love the way that he talks and he constantly brings up these issues like, you know, the Mexicans being rapists and crossing the border and attacking the border. So he builds up that kind of view, which when he brings it up, gets a response from the crowd. And this is populist type rhetoric. And that's who he is. And that's the danger of Trump. And the Democrats have got no answer for it at all. No, they're still too polite. And he goes around the country inciting this kind of mood. And it's dangerous. Now, where Liston comes in and what's interested, he starts a trade war. What does a trade war do? A trade war weakens your trading partners.
Right.
When you weaken a trading partner, means lower profits, which obviously weakens a currency. It also leads to the central banks there now, because the economy is weakened, having to lower rates. So all of that strengthens the dollar because the U.S. is stronger, but it weakens your dollar. So you're not manipulating your currency. Sorry, it weakens your currency. You're not manipulating it. That's a natural reaction or response to a trade war. And that's what's happening to America's trading partners, whether it's in Europe, whether it's in China, wherever it is. They will be weakened by a trade war. So how can you want your, how can you not expect the dollar to go stronger? And how can you then want a weaker dollar? You're not, you know what I'm getting at? You can't have that.
You can't have the best of both worlds, exactly.
You can't have the best of all those worlds. You know, and also you can't have a thriving economy. You can't have a thriving economy if you're weakening the global economy, because even though you're 25% of the global economy, there's 75% out there that's getting weaker. So all of this adds up to, is bringing him down. It will bring the U.S. economy, global economy, and then the U.S. economy down. So you're saying, well, what is your end game? What are you trying to achieve?
Exactly.
Populism or just re-election? If this is the cost of re-election, well, then God help America.
Well, it's spreading the populist doctrine as well, because people are picking it up, and suddenly it's just below the radar. And because there's so much else going on, we've got South Korea and Japan suddenly at loggerheads as well. Two massive, massive, important trading economies. They've just taken each other off the list of favoured trading partners, which I think is incredibly significant. I mean, South Korea and Japan together are a significant part of the world economy. And then the other thing is, we're into our 11th week of problems in Hong Kong. And one of the busiest airports in the world, it's a tourism hub, it's a financial services hub, and it's also a very important airport for transit passengers. It's closed down for the day. There are tens of thousands of people on the streets every single day. This is, to me, again, incredibly significant, sentiment-wise.
Very, very, very much so. We don't know where this is leading to as well. And China has to tread very carefully, because it's still an important part of the Chinese economy. And it's even for Chinese companies, it's an important financial area. So you can't afford pressure on the Hong Kong economy from it's also a very important consumer area.
Yes.
So it's tense, you know, and yes, there might be certain faction of violence that they can overcome, but it's all adding up to worries that we've got about the global economy. And you forgot, there's still tensions in Italy as well, and you've still got Argentina. I know Argentina is not a big part of the global economy, but there have been a lot of problems there as well, with the president now losing what is a primary vote. Now, I don't know what the primary vote means. I mean, if he doesn't win the primary vote, probably that means he can't stand for election. So the peso there is down about 15%. It might be one of the reasons that the rand has taken such a hit today, as emerging market currencies come under pressure. So we're about 1540, which is 1537, 1538 against the dollar, which is also not where we want to be.
No, it's not. The gold price was this morning 1490 when I spoke to Greg Davies at 9:30. It's now 1506, 1507. The fear gauge continues to show people's attitude towards geopolitics and the economy. And it's, as I say, David, the perfect storm. Let's have a quick look at something more positive and have a look at the upside today. And it's been cushioned by, or rather influenced by, the rand when you have a look at the top five movers on the JSE.
Yeah.
Let's have a look now. It was Sappy, I think, earlier on. I've got Sappy up 12%. Goldfields, Harmony, Sibanye, Anglo Gold, every single one a commodity producer, every single one in a certain way geared to the rand.
Well, gold shares have become very popular now. And I think that's a global play. That's not only, gold companies globally are benefiting from the move that we've seen in the gold price. And also locally, the rand, although we don't mind that much. Goldfields does, Goldfields has just got South Deep here. So I think this is more to do with moves that we're seeing in international markets, but it is helping us and it's steadying the markets. The only against that, though, and I haven't seen much fallout in our stocks, is that the iron ore price seems to be under a lot of pressure.
Yes.
And although I see BHP is holding its own, that might be on translation here, but Glencore Anglo's down a bit. Kumba holding its own. So I'm not sure whether that price steadied or not, or whether this is just the rand effect kind of cushioning the impact. But that's the only positive side. Sappi's probably coming from a very oversold position. You know, it's been
Bless you.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
I couldn't hold it over. Sappi is down, I mean, over the last 12 months, down 50%. Over this year alone, 40%. So I think the bounce is from a very, very oversold position.
You sound a little, I mean, you're always very chipper when we speak, but you sound, from the communications you send and from the beginning of this conversation, you sound a little bit depleted. You sound a little bit despondent,
You know why? Because this is politicians. You know what I mean? This is not economic cycles. And this is, you call it a perfect storm. It is a perfect storm of politicians interfering and really for their own for their own self-satisfaction or for their own aims or I'm getting a bit tongue-tied here, but you know what I mean. And when you look at America, you say this could have been avoided. You know, we didn't have to go down this path. You don't have to take America down this. You don't have to make America one of the most hated nations in the world simply because you believe other people have been taking advantage of them. This is previous presidents, and this comes, you know, from the end of the Second World War, where America was took over as a policeman of the world. But these things can be sorted out by negotiation, not by the kind of attitude that we're seeing with Trump. So you're getting that coming through, this whole war with China. You know, we're not sure what the end game is. We're not sure what Trump's end game in attacking China is like this. And he's not only attacking China, he's attacking everybody that was a so-called friend. So that's where the anger comes in, is that we can't read it, Lindsay. You know what I mean? I can't sit down here and go through a set of accounts and say, oh, this is a nice company, because you're having to deal with all these other issues, you know, around you. And you say, well, you know, it doesn't really matter until these things are sorted out. So I think that's what places us in this kind of position. And locally as well. When it comes to locally as well, there's no attempt to turn around the SA economy. It's more ideology. You know, it's all ideological issues that are being addressed, which we can't afford. You know what I mean?
I think what Mr. Trump is doing, and this doesn't apply to South African politicians, they've been emboldened by their own ideology for a couple of decades now. But what Mr. Trump has done has emboldened other people to behave badly as well.
Yes.
I think that's what it is. Alienating the world's largest economy from everybody else. And they're saying to themselves, well, if he can do it, then we can do it.
Exactly right. It doesn't. In fact, once the policeman of the world is not there, you can do what you like. You know, as you say, so that has emboldened other authoritarian governments to do what they like. Dead right, absolutely right.
And the scary thing is, of course, that there isn't a Democratic contender that you can say, I think he could take Trump on. Joe Biden over the weekend, Sleepy Joe, as President Trump calls him, Sleepy Joe Biden made gaffe after gaffe during speeches. He doesn't seem to be, and this is where I might actually agree with Trump, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but he doesn't seem well enough prepared to even consider office. He kept making personal errors about his previous life.
I know. You know, listen, he's in his late 70s or mid 70s. I don't know why he chose to do this in the twilight.
Well, so are you, and you're pretty sharp.
No, I wouldn't go. but he's not. I don't think he's the answer. You know, somebody, I don't like her, Elizabeth Warren, but she's a much tougher person, you know, who would not be bulldozed by a Trump. But she's not the kind of person we want, you know. She just calls all the banks rigged, and she's also giving that she's giving that left-wing rhetoric as well, which has also started to annoy people, you know, where you're born a person and you can decide when you're 5 or 6 who you want to be, whether you want to be a male or a female or a half this and that, you know. And you say, hold on a sec, you know, I'm not criticizing it, I'm just saying, hold on a sec. I'm just saying, we've got Trump, you know, we've got to attack him. Let's get real about it.
Do you know the interesting thing is today, and it suddenly dawned on me that maybe it might gain some momentum, is Steve Bannon, who is the ultra-right-wing former supporter or still supporter of Trump, but now a supporter of a right-wing global movement. He was on television yesterday, I think it was, or maybe in the early hours of this morning, and he said Michelle Obama is going to become a contender. She may be put forward as the candidate. And if she comes in, then goodness me, then Trump's got a problem.
that's quite interesting. You know, because she's a tough lady. She's particularly smart. You know, very, very smart. And you need somebody who can say to him, listen, Donald, you know, you're a philanderer. you're not that clever. You think you're clever, but you're not that. You know, you've got to use the same kind of language against him. You tell lies all the time. You said this. This is not true. And you've got to look him in the eye when you say those kind of things, you know. And you've got to have that kind of personality. And unfortunately, there's nobody in the Democratic Party that has got the strength to stand up to what he says. You know, for him to accuse this Epstein of, you know, blame the Clintons, I mean, it's outrageous for a president of the United States.
It's an impeachable offense. I'm sorry. It's an impeachable tweet.
Yeah, I know,
tweet.
But no one's got the courage to, you know, everybody is so polite and so so respectful in that. But you need, you know, we need a street fighter to take him on.
Thank goodness the football season started to take us away from this, because what did we have? We had Friday night, we had Liverpool-Norwich. Yeah. I thought Liverpool, they looked okay. They didn't look champions material, I don't think. Norwich, obviously quite naive. It's their first game back in the top league, the top flight for 4 years. And they could have had a couple of goals. Manchester City looked sublime, but West Ham looked rubbish, that 5-0 thrashing.
Yeah.
Manchester United, I thought, were second best for about an hour of that game yesterday, despite the fact they won 4-0. Unfortunately, Chelsea were unlucky to hit the bar on the post in the first half. It could have been completely different. But anyway, fantastic entertainment.
Oh, it is. And it's what we've got to see the other sides coming through, whether there's anybody outside the ones that we know that is, like last year it was Wolves, you know, whether we can see anything coming through that can topple these, or at least give some of these top six clubs a bit of a run. I unfortunately, I couldn't even watch Arsenal. I had to do.
You didn't miss much.
I had to do something. I believe so.
It was a really dreadful game.
Was it just? I would have imagined that he played. He didn't play his top seamer. I don't know how these new players are going to, you know, how they're going to perform. Whether they are that good. I liked Spurs. Spurs looked good. Aston Villa just got tired after. You know, they started to make the kind of mistakes that the first lesson in soccer is clear your lines, get rid of the balls.
Yes.
And they were caught in possession in very dangerous areas, which just gave Spurs the comeback. Mm. Anyway, but they looked all right. But it's nice. I'm glad we've got something to talk about and take our mind off all this nonsense.
Exactly. Thank you for all that nonsense, David. That's David Shapiro from Sasswin, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.